This conference is being recorded.
Welcome to the Secrets of B2B Marketing Campaign Development Teleseminar with Mike Gosby. I'm Mitchell Levy, CEO of Happy About, the host of this seminar. Happy About is a quick-to-publish book publisher that enables companies to establish thought leadership through books. We are currently looking for authors that want to publish, as well as companies that would like to have books written for them. Visit us at www.happyabout.info if you want to read and share good, compelling books with your staff. We wish to thank Rainmaker Systems, the sponsor of this teleseminar. Rainmaker helps companies maximize their revenue using a proven, integrated approach to delivering effective sales and marketing programs at each stage of the customer lifecycle. To learn what Rainmaker can do for you, visit them at www.rainmakersystems.com. In this seminar, we have mooted out participation and would encourage you to ask questions by sending email to info@happyabout.info. We'll have a conversation with the author first, and then we'll take questions later. So remember to send questions at info@happyabout.info. Now, let me introduce Mike Gosby, author of the book Marketing Campaign Development. Mike is a marketing strategist whose campaign development practices have been adopted by Aspect, HP, Informatica, Sun, Symantec, and many others. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Mitchell. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great. It's great to have you. Hey, let's do a little bit. I know I gave a little bit of your bio, but how about you tell us a little bit more and why you're here and how did you get to where you are today?
So, sure, I'd be happy to. So I've been doing marketing work for the past 25 years, working with companies such as HP and Sun and a couple of other startups before starting my own practice, which is called Kickstart Alliance, a sales and marketing consulting team. So over the past 25 years, I've really had a chance to dig into big companies and small companies and look at how they do their marketing campaigns. And there's a lot of angst and trauma that goes with the development of campaigns, and I've kind of learned through the school of hard knocks how to do really world-class best campaigns, and that's really what the book is about. And that's how I got to what I focus on now as part of my business practice, which is helping large and small companies take an assessment of their marketing caliber, both their people, their processes, and their plans, and look for ways to optimize their campaigns.
That sounds great. Hey, so why don't you, before we start, let's give you an easy one, and that is tell me what an integrated marketing campaign is.
Right. And this is, you know, it sounds like such a simple question, and it's actually not as simple as one might think. In fact, the truth about integrated marketing campaigns is those three words, integrated marketing campaign, is very easy to say, but it's very hard to do. And it's hard to do because all of us, it doesn't matter what company that you're working with or what company size you're working with, our time is so valuable and we're tasked to do so many things that we all like to take shortcuts. And because we take shortcuts, sometimes we don't plan as well as we should. We're looking for ways to get multiple things done at the same time. And as a result, the integrated marketing campaign isn't so marketing at the end of the day, or isn't so integrated at the end of the day. Sometimes it's a little bit confusing. So really what a good integrated marketing plan is a plan that is able to integrate both messaging and the vehicles that we use to communicate to a target prospect. And those integrated mechanisms, such as PR, advertising, events, blogs, all of those fold together to really encourage a relevant, meaningful dialogue with the prospect. And that dialogue unfolds over time. And the whole goal of an integrated marketing plan is through those combinations of the magical marketing mix, if you will, that we're able to accelerate the sales cycle and qualify those prospects faster and, equally important, find out who isn't qualified and gently remove them from the sales funnel so we don't waste time, money, and resources on them.
Nice. So what's sort of the end result? what are you focused on? How long does it take? And what are the metrics, or what are you looking for?
Well, an integrated marketing campaign really can take on a variety of forms and sizes. So let me first start by defining a couple of terms. And the word campaign in and of itself can be confusing. When I'm talking about integrated marketing campaigns, I'm talking about the word campaign with a capital C, and it means that we're integrated in messaging across marketing types, and it's a rather robust, prioritized focus that the company has. And I'll give you an example of what these might be. It might be, our business needs to break into a new market in a new geography. Therefore, we really need to run a bunch of awareness activities that help not only make people aware of our products and services, but educate them and maybe get them to be more informed on it such that they can make a better business decision. So there might be a whole lot of awareness things that we'll do over, let's say, a six-month period. Or we might have a campaign that's aimed about renewal. We want to renew our installed base. And so there could be a whole series of PR, advertising, webinars, et cetera, that we'll use, again, over some period of time, let's say 3 to 6 months. And all of those fit together such that we can actually nurture that dialogue. So when I'm talking about campaign, I'm talking about the campaign with the capital C. I make that distinction because quite often one of the most common mistakes or points of confusion that marketers find within is that they'll say the word campaign, but they'll use it in a sentence such as, we've got a PR campaign. We're doing a Google AdWords campaign. We're going to run a print advertising campaign. And those aren't campaigns in the sense that I mean the word campaign. Those would be siloed activities around a specific discipline. So as we move forward through the rest of our discussion, I really like to emphasize the interactiveness of all of these marketing elements that play together. So with that in mind, the first secret of success, if you will, to building a campaign is making sure that we've stipulated the proper objective. What do we really want to achieve? And where we've got some points of confusion, again, is because we're all moving so fast in marketing and we know we need to be doing some lead generation activities, as an example. We'll fire off a bunch of tactics that we'll be doing, and we're really not going to get a campaign at the end of the day. In fact, we get a concept that I call marketing popcorn, which is really the result of siloed thinking. Here's a press release over here. Here's a webinar over there. And the two items are never tied together in such a way that the prospect can interact with those and take advantage of those activities and offers when they're ready to.
Let me step in for a second. I'm just curious. You got me thinking about this for a second. And what would be the proper term? If somebody said, I'm doing a press release campaign or a Google AdWords campaign, very siloed thinking, and it really is standalone popcorn in your word, what would be the right term? I mean, just say you're really doing a Google AdWords tactical activity, or what's the right terminology?
You know what? That's a really good question. And actually, what most times companies are doing is they're executing a collection of activities, activity being the key word. An activity would be, something that you're doing to generate action or to cause your prospect to generate action on your behalf, such as register for a webinar. Now, when those activities are done all by themselves in the silos that I mentioned earlier, they really are standalone activities. What I try to encourage companies to do is to stitch those activities and offers together. It's kind of like a trail of breadcrumbs that will lead the prospect through the sales cycle. And when you group those activities and offers together, you get a program. And a program might be a lead generation type program of various flavors. And if you have multiple programs that are tied together over a longer period of time, you get a campaign. And so the campaign is, think of a campaign as a marketing initiative, something very important and strategic your company is going after. For example, we're going to break into a new market in Europe. We're going to establish a beachhead. We're going to capture X% of the market over the next 12 to 18 months. you'd have a campaign around that. And you'd have the next level down would be the collection of programs or activities on how you're going to get your foothold in that new market.
Got it. Thanks. That's really helpful. So what I think there's in your words, there's always some times where things go well and sometimes where they don't go well. What are some of the secrets to running successful campaigns?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. And what it all boils down to are the two primary challenges that we marketers have. And it doesn't matter whether you're a marketing director at a big company like HP and Sun, or you're a VP of marketing at a startup with a very small staff. We all run into these. And here are these two primary challenges. The first challenge is, how do we decide what the right marketing mix is to go out and engage our target audience in a discussion? How do we know whether we need a webinar or a press release? What are the right things? And we all struggle around that. The second point, and this actually goes hand in hand with this, although it may not be obvious at first, but the second challenge we have is, how do we manage the politics inside our company such that we can engage the sales team properly and they're advocates for our campaigns and we're advocates for their sales process and priorities? And how do we educate and guide our executive staff, the CEOs and the other VPs in the organization, such that they'll let us execute the campaigns that we know our business needs? Those are the two primary challenges. Again, it doesn't matter whether you're in a big company or a small company. We all have them. I've experienced those both as a member of the executive team at a large company and also a VP of marketing at a startup. And those are really the two top challenges that we've got.
So it seems like the politics one is politics and fiefdoms and silos are all really scary things. How do you get around those? How do you make that work?
Right. Well, there's a way to solve both those problems at the same time, and that's through a process that I talk about in my book, Marketing Campaign Development. And the process, let me boil it all down to make it as simple as possible. There are three phases, if you will, of any campaign development process. And it all starts with the leadership decision, if you will, that says, you know what, here's our primary campaign objective. This is what we want to achieve over the next 6, 12 months, 18 months. And you need some executive involvement, right, that they help guide that direction. Let's assume that we've got that. So the three phases are simply kicking off the campaign such that you get everybody on the same page that says, oh, okay, I understand what we're trying to do, and I understand what my role is to help guide and execute the campaign. That's phase one. Phase two is what I call synchronization. Now, we spend most time in the campaign development process around synchronizing. Synchronizing is the step where once everybody understands what the big picture is and the role that they're going to play to support it, so for example, the PR manager understands, okay, I need to come up with a PR plan that's going to help achieve the objective of the campaign. The direct mail person knows what they need to do. The web or the event person knows what roles they need to play. They're going to go off and think about how to use their expertise and their silver bullets that they have in their control. And they're going to figure out how to apply them to achieve the overall campaign objective. Now, we don't want siloed thinking. So synchronization are those nexus points in time where the group gets together to collaborate and discuss and share and say, oh, here's what I'm going to do in PR to support this, and you invite feedback from the other disciplines. Here's what advertising is going to do. Here's what the events are going to do. And there's cross-pollinizing amongst the team, and that all happens during synchronization. We also uncover gaps and overlaps during that process. And then the third and final phase is getting to decision. And decision is once we've synchronized and we've come up with our top set of recommendations on how to execute this campaign, right? This is at the ground level. These are the things, the activities we're going to do. These are the offers we're going to do. This is our estimated budget. We need to get executive buy-in that says, yep, we like it and we're behind you. This is the plan of record. Let's go execute that. So in answer to your first question, the best secret of success is guiding a team to kick off, synchronize, and get to decision around a plan. And once that happens, I've experienced with the teams that I've worked with things like 30% improvement in time to market. Once that plan is done, you're able to actually get it executed in 30% less time because everybody's on the same page. And one example I'll just throw out is in the area of PR. I used to be a PR manager at HP for many years, and it used to take us up to 9 iterations to draft a press release because nobody was on the same page as to what we were trying to do. The messages were unclear. But once we executed
Mike, I'll bet you there are a lot of people on the line shaking their head, yes. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. Well,
actually, I get a lot of groans, and I know the PR managers out there will take this somewhat with some chagrin at this because it is so true. But by having this process, we're able to get it down to now 2 or 3 iterations or edits or versions of the press release, not the 9. So obviously that's greater than a 30% improvement, but that's the kind of things people have been experiencing when they add this little bit of discipline and thoughtful process to the mix.
So yeah, no, it's amazing when everyone's all behind the same thought process, all making stuff happen. Do you have to have outside people come in to do that, or can you do inside people, or is it just more a process? What's the key here?
You know what? That's a really good question. You do not need outside help to do this. If you have a sense of templates and some best practices to leverage, and largely, so let me do kind of a step out of the context of this discussion as to why I even wrote the book that I did. So I used to be a campaign manager at HP for 8 years, and then I was a director of campaign managers at Sun. And every time I got involved with a team or I was asked to build a team to say, hey, you know, Mike, let's go execute some campaigns on X, Y, and Z, I was always at a loss on where to start. So I'd go to the bookstore, I'd go to Barnes & Noble, I'd go to Borders Books, and I'd be looking at the business section, or I'd go to Amazon.com, and I'd think, okay, what business books, what marketing books are out there that will actually give me the recipe to build a foundation that I can leverage on and make unique for my own company? And there's nothing out there. There's a lot of great marketing books from Trout and Rees and from other very well-known authors. And I love those books, but those books are largely about concepts and theory behind the practice of marketing. There was nothing that was a practical, pragmatic guidebook. Here's how you do it. Here's how the templates. Here's how you kick off the event. Here's your agenda for the kickoff meeting. Here are your metrics and your milestones. So because that didn't exist, I felt a need to actually write it myself, if only for myself to use. And in the course of writing it and talking with other chief marketing officers and CEOs I know, I found that there was actually a lot of interest in the book, and that, you know, caused me to kind of take the next step and say, well, you know, I'm going to make this available for everybody. So the short answer to your question, Mitchell, is no, you don't need to hire a team of consultants to do this for you. You can do it yourself, and certainly I hope the templates in the book and the concepts will help you. But the ultimate requirement that any marketer needs to make this happen is they have to have enough confidence in their marketing foundation, and if they've got this already, they know what target markets to go after, you've got your marketing objective set, then all you really need is a little guide on how to use these best practices. On the other hand, when some teams are in the process of forming anew, or you want to shake things up and to reinvent the process of marketing because there have been some operational problems in the past, it is appropriate to bring in somebody to help you do this as an outsider. They bring a fresh perspective. But it can happen equally well either way.
Yeah, I would kind of argue that that it's worthwhile to bring in outside experts like yourself or bring in companies like Rainmaker and outsource the entire process of marketing campaign development, because what you're looking at, and I think you said this up front, and maybe we should spend a little time about it, what you're looking at is the real goal of a marketing campaign is to drive sales.
Exactly
right.
Right.
And so maybe you could talk a little bit more about that, and then there's also some statistics about the longevity of a CMO these days and the fact that they should wake up and do more. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, Mike?
Yeah, so let me, and in talking about this, I'm going to give you a real-life example here. So first, the statistic, and this came out actually in a recent article on the longevity of chief marketing officers and VPs of sales in today's turbulent and fast-moving business world. And basically, the bottom line is that your average chief marketing officer has perhaps 21, 22 months of tenure before they're, they have to move on because of largely, and I hate to say this, lack of results. So the tenure of chief marketing officers, because it's so short, they're very compelled to want to jump in right away and say, hey, let's take an assessment. Let's find what's not working right. Let's fix our processes, and let's get some improved, achievable ROI right away. We don't have any time to waste. So here's my case study on this. And I did some work with a, I would say that they're a large internet security company. And they've got maybe 500, 600 marketers worldwide. And they had grown largely through acquisition of other companies. And as such, they had a somewhat splintered marketing department. They had groupings, collections of folks in different locations around the world, each charged with different elements of producing and executing marketing campaigns. And because of this, there was no central process. So they hired a new chief marketing officer who gave me a call and said, hey, you know, Mike, I know what I want to do, but I would really like to get an outside perspective and, you know, can you help me bring to light the right things that we should be doing to improve our processes? And so what followed was really a three-step plan. And the first step, and I talked about this earlier, was just an assessment. Let's take a look at the current campaigns. And the first place where we started was, let's actually define what a campaign is. And we had all kinds of different interpretations of what a campaign was. Some people thought campaigns were very glorious, glamorous advertising and advertising only programs or activities. Other people thought it was, oh, we're running a Google AdWord campaign, and they're very micro-focused, as I had talked about earlier. So the first thing we did was got everybody onto the same page and said, guys, here's a common set of definitions for us. And there's no way we can support a dozen major campaigns with a capital C. We need to prioritize these. So let's work on getting on the same page and identifying what the top three or four things we want to do over the next 12 to 18 months are. And let's build programs and activities that support that. So that was part one. Part two was then really rolling up our sleeves to get together with the cross-functional marketing team and to help them learn to collaborate better. And we did that through the process of these synchronization meetings that I talked about earlier. And these were very, very smart people, but because they didn't have a process that allowed them to come together in some routine fashion with the prescribed agenda for those meetings, there was a lot of wasted time before. And so we added structure to say, here are the questions we need to ask. Here are the deliverables we need to help us build the best integrated plan. Let's get everybody on the same page, break off, do your collective best practices, bring them back together at a team, let's share, let's find the gaps, let's find the overlaps. And that process, we were able to actually streamline a lot of that into just a few weeks to actually get the first draft plan done. So what actually never happened or what was being feared that, oh, it's going to take us 6 months to get an integrated plan. We actually did this in a little less than 4 weeks. It's like three and a half weeks. And the third piece of it was helping them get to decision. There was no steering committee. In fact, there was no even designated executive who could provide leadership to say, yes, this is what we're going to do, and we approve the plan to move forward. So we also built that into the process. And the long and short of it was after about 4 or 5 weeks of working together, identifying where the problem points were, where the bottlenecks were in their existing plan, we identified those. We put a corrective measure to help teams make better use of the time they spend together collaborating. And third, we gave them a template to start from to collect their thoughts, and then through the course of working the process over the next quarter, they made the process their own and internalized this. And at the end of the day, we did a major training for everybody who touched the marketing process. And by the end of that, we had such tremendous enthusiasm and energy. And the development of the first three campaigns that resulted out of that produced some dynamite results that was very apparent to everybody in sales and marketing afterwards, just because we had that clarified direction and the energy around achieving a set of specific goals.
So that's a good question. What are the common sort of KPIs or key performance indicators that you need to put in place for the marketing campaign with, in your words, with the big C? What are the KPIs you need to focus in on?
You know, that's a really good question. And so the caveat I'll say up front is that it depends, and it's different based on the particular company and the specific objective that they set forth. So let me try to explain by way of example. When I talk with companies, I frequently find that there's confusion about what are the right KPIs or metrics. And because they're not sure what the right ones really are, it's very easy to default to what you can currently measure. Unfortunately, what you can currently measure isn't always the best metric. So let me pick on my friends in PR again. And I know my PR listeners out there will cringe at this, but I was working with a company who decided that they were going to run a series of awareness campaigns and activities underneath that. And since they didn't have any measures to do mind share or perception in the marketplace, they would control the one thing or measure the one thing they could control, and that was the number of press releases they could generate. Therefore, their metric was that they would generate X number of press releases during a month and a quarter. And, of course, I did immediate timeout with the folks on that and said, you know what, for a number of reasons, which I won't go into here, that is an incredibly wrong metric to use. And so we had a good discussion to say, okay, well, now wait a minute, let's try to be a little bit more creative about what really are the objectives we have and what would be a meaningful measure that would tell us whether we've achieved success or not. So I guess that point that I'm trying to make is it's not always what you can measure. There needs to sometimes be some out-of-the-box thinking about what you can go out forth and measure. Having said that, ultimately, a lot of what I coach folks on is in the area of lead generation. And so there are two primary KPIs that most commonly enter the mix. They're not the only two, but these are the two most common. One is very tangible, and one is very intangible. The intangible one is the cost per qualified lead. And that can be measured in a number of ways. Any companies who's using a CRM system will normally have a head start in capturing some of this information. But again, before we start to measure anything, we need to make sure we've got the definitions identified about what a qualified lead is and what it is not. And then to not only measure that in and of itself, but to measure the conversion rates between steps within your sales process and the sales funnel. And so there can be metrics along the way. It's not just about, hey, look how many registrants we got to the webinar. That's not enough. We want to measure how many registrants turned into qualified prospects and how many of those qualified prospects actually received a sales proposal. And so there can be KPIs at each step of the qualification process. That's the tangible piece. Now, the intangible piece, and I can argue that this is equally, if not perhaps a little bit more so important, is how good is the communication and collaboration between the sales team and the marketing team. And I hate to say this, but I run into companies of all sizes where the sales team and the marketing team don't talk to each other. And when there is a gulf between the two organizations, no amount of marketing effort is really going to be viewed as positive or as positive as it probably is. So I always advocate a hand-in-glove marketing-sales relationship. I mean, it just needs to be tied together so closely. So what this means is at the end of the day and at the end of every day, how good is the chemistry between the sales and marketing team? If the sales VP who's walking down the hall and runs into the CEO and the CEO says, hey, how are things going with marketing? If the VP of sales says, hey, you know what? I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling like the marketing team understands me. They're working real hard to get me some of the stuff I need. I tell you, that's worth its weight in gold. Of course, okay. The flip side to that is traumatic when the CEO, where the VP of sales says, gosh, you know what? I just don't trust marketing. I don't even know what they're doing. No amount of good campaigns will be received well when that happens.
No, I think you're right. It's important. It goes back to the ever-changing face of marketers and what does the CMO need to do. And it's generating sales. It's making money for the company. It's being successful.
Absolutely. In fact, the number one, and I'm a big believer in this, the number one objective for marketing is to help sales identify and close sales. If we're not doing that, then I have to wonder what we're doing as a marketing organization. I think it's all about helping the sales team, and there are a number of ways to do that, but I'm a full advocate of that approach.
Hey, Mike, I got a couple questions from the audience. Why don't we ask one or two questions, and then I've got one or two comments based on things you were going to talk about. But one of the questions that just came in was, how do you get the CFO, CEO, and others controlling the money to give it up?
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good question because there is so much skepticism, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but skepticism about where do I need to make the marketing investment and how big of a marketing investment do I really need to make? And I tend to take a very practical and pragmatic view of this particular question. So when we're dealing with a VP of sales or a chief financial officer and they're concerned about the marketing dollars, we really need to start with or look for some success quickly. Where can we get success quickly? And usually that can focus around a specific activity or a set of activities and looking for ways to improve the ROI on that specific piece. So let me give you a case example. So there was a small internet security company that I was working with not too long ago, and they asked me to come in and help take some look at the process that they were using around a webinar, an upcoming webinar. Their director of field marketing had just left, and they wanted me to come in to make sure that nothing fell through the cracks. So I asked a couple of questions. Tell me about the webinar. How are you promoting it? And their answer was, hey, you know, Mike, we've outsourced the whole thing to Ziff Davis. They've got a wonderful solution where they're going to advertise it. They're guaranteeing 250 registrants. They're going to host it, and afterwards they're going to post it on their website for a year. And all registrants, which they were calling leads, will be automatically handed over to inside sales. And I said, you know what? I think we can do a heck of a lot better and not have you spend any more money. Let's see if we can do that. So what transpired after that was I pulled together the VP of marketing, the PR manager, the channel manager, inside sales manager, and a couple of other folks. There were six or seven of us. And I said, guys, give me half an hour. I'd like to ask you a few questions to see if we could strategize a better, more effective marketing blueprint around this webinar that's going to result in more leads. So I then asked them a series of questions about who their target audience was, how they felt the audience wanted to engage with them, what offers they expected from the company, and then more important, once we get their name, what are we going to do with them? What needs to happen next to continue this dialogue, this nurturing dialogue that we want to have with them over time? And what happens after that? And what happens to the folks who register but don't attend? What kind of dialogue do we need to have with them? And then lastly, how are these activities going to help sales expedite these prospects through the funnel and ultimately close more deals? So in this 30-minute exercise, if you will, I asked these questions. We had a very engaged dialogue. And at the end of this, we had formed a marketing blueprint or a flowchart, if you will, on how these activities and offers would stitch together. And we realized that there wasn't just one way to promote the webinar. We actually had six different mechanisms within our control that the managers, with a little bit of forethought, could take action of that afternoon to use to promote the webinar. And then we also realized, we came to the proper conclusion that whether the folks attended, registered and attended, versus those who registered and did not attend, that we needed to have two very different dialogues for those set of people. And as such, there was a collection of additional offers, white papers, special offers and such, that we could offer them in different points of time, depending on whether they attended the webinar or not. So we stitched out, if you will, or sketched out a couple of arms off of that flowchart to encourage the dialogue over the next couple of weeks, whether they attended or whether they didn't attend. Ultimately, the bottom line was we wanted to engage these prospects 2, 3, or 4 times during the month, and only if a prospect engaged us in multiple venues and met our qualification criteria, only would those prospects would be the only ones that would go over to the inside sales team. So what were the results of all this? Well, the results were, instead of 250 registrants, we had 1,050 registrants. Okay. And instead of taking those 250 registrants and lobbing them over to the inside sales team, we engaged them over a couple of weeks. We had 497 of those 1,050 people touch the company 3 times. And so it was very easy to identify who was qualified and who was not. Those 497 went to inside sales. The rest went back into the marketing nurturing program. So why am I telling this story? Why is this important? This is important because we took those results and we showed the CEO and the CFO, and we said, look at this. We didn't spend, we were going to be happy with our cost per lead of $200, where the lead was just a common registrant. Look how much better we got. We got our cost per lead down to $88, and we got a whole lot more of them than the 250 that they want. So once we showed success with this isolated, if you will, activity, or the mini campaign around this activity, the CFO and the CEO were much more friendly to us when we said, you know what, we've got some other ideas we want to spend some more marketing investment on. And they were much more open to that discussion than they were before. So I have to start small, look for that success, and additional openings will come for further investment.
Oh, that's great. Hey, you mentioned the term, which I don't think we talked about yet, marketing blueprint. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know what? Marketing blueprint is kind of a new idea that I had over the last 6 months to the last year. And it's not a new idea. It's not rocket science. But it's literally, how do we build a flow chart that stitches together these activities and offers that we want to execute that will unfold this nurturing dialogue we want to have with the prospect? And I realized, you know, in my prior years, I'd have to be making up this engagement on the fly. When I was at HP or Sun or working with some of the other companies I was at, there was no visual way to represent what we were trying to do. And so that's where the marketing blueprint was born from. And the blueprint is really a mechanism we use to illustrate this trail of breadcrumbs idea that I talked about earlier, how and when these activities and offers are stitched together and when they get triggered. And that's what the blueprint is all about.
Nice, nice. So another question from the audience, and that is, how do you get the internal champion, and how do you get that person involved? How do you feed them? How do they make sure it works successfully for you?
Yeah, another really good question, and this is also a topic that I cover in the book, Marketing Campaign Development. For any campaign to be successful, and it doesn't matter whether you're in a big company or a small company, you need to have two very important players. And in small companies, they may be the same person, but maybe not. The first is an executive sponsor, and that is somebody who sits at the executive level who can help with the prioritization and the leadership to say, you know what, guys, here's the mountain we're going to go climb. You know, the new market we're going to break into, we're looking to launch a new product at X period of time. Whatever the objective and the goal is, you want the executive sponsor at the end of the day to say, guys, the buck stops here, and this is important, and we're going to go and do this. And you need that person to help remove some roadblocks or differences of opinion that can happen later on down the road. That's the first person you need. The other is what I call a campaign manager. Now, depending on the size of your company, you may or may not have a designated employee with the business card that says campaign manager. It may be part of somebody else's job, a director of marketing or perhaps a marketing leader in product marketing or some other organization. Doesn't really matter what the title is. What matters is the roles and responsibility of this individual. And what's most important about the campaign manager is they're tasked with guiding this process, the process I talked about earlier about kickoff to synchronization to decision. And so a campaign manager doesn't dictate what the tactics are. By all means, they should not do that, but they should create an environment where there can be team collaboration, team learning, and designated milestones and expectations along the campaign development path. And so the campaign manager is critical for that function, because if nobody owns it, it's not going to happen. Everybody is tasked with their own specific duty, and you need somebody who can kind of invite people to step out of the silos that they're in to come share in this larger process. Those are the two roles that you need. And one thing that I'll add just in closing here is I'm a big believer in that the best, the world-class campaign managers have a very specific profile and experience level to lead that process. This is not a job that anybody can do. There's a very specific skill set. So in Chapter 7 of the book, I actually provide a description, both a job description and a list of attributes that you'd want to look at, whether you're looking to bring on that role in a big company or a small company. Some of those insights folks have found valuable. So I mentioned that as a resource for future reference as well.
That sounds great. You know, in the last answer, you just answered two other questions we had. So let me summarize what I heard, and then we'll have you give your final comments. But basically, what I'm hearing you say is that marketing campaign development is with a big C, and that is making sure all silos are working, don't exist. Actually, that all functions work together to achieve a particular goal. It can take a while, but you can do it quickly without necessarily a whole lot of resources. And what's important is to know where you're going. Because if you know exactly where you're going, you can then define the right metrics and KPIs that will help you get there. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great summary, Mitchell. And the one thing that I would add to this, because I do get a lot of sometimes concern when we talk about the campaign development process, and the concern is, you know, Mike, we've already got marketing activities and programs. They're already in motion. And we just don't have time to throw that out and start brand new. And the good news is, you don't need to do that. In fact, in all practicality, if you've got some programs already in motion, you need to let those run its course. So my advice to companies of all sizes is look for three things where you can make small but noticeable improvements. And these things can be very quick to implement. So for example, one would be, and one company I worked with actually did this, once a month, they held a special brown bag lunch series where all the marketing disciplines got together to update each other on top projects in motion in each of the specific disciplines. That was huge in creating broader awareness and ultimately collaboration among the team members. Another mechanism somebody did was say, you know what, let's unify around a common template to really understand what activities are going on. And I provide a template, also an online version of the template that folks can download in the book. So the point is that, yes, you want to look for things that you can have get quick results and quick progress, but it doesn't need to take a whole lot of time. It doesn't need to take a whole lot of budget. You start small and you start with the immediate pain points, and once you get that first success, it'll be easier to achieve the next success and the one after that.
But, you know, the interesting part, assuming you know what your goals are and assuming you put your KPIs in place, if you're executing plans and you're making money, you're just going to continue to spend more because you know what you're doing. You're going to get the CFO, CEO approval because you're actually making money doing what you need to do.
Absolutely. And I tell you, because I see this happen over and over again, once you've got even a small activity or a big activity like a webinar, once you've got something that has already produced exponential improvement of results and ROI, you know, that webinar program I talked about earlier, we quadrupled the number of leads out of that program, and it took 4 weeks to do that. So once you get that, I tell you, the team morale improves, the energy of the marketing staff improves, the bonds between sales and marketing reach new heights, and that fuels, that kind of behavior and encouragement fuels itself, and it leads to the next level of success, just like you've talking about. It's infectious. And it's what makes marketing most enjoyable when you've got a team and an organization that supports that process and is reaping the benefits of just a little bit of added disciplined thinking can make all the difference.
Mike, that's great. Thank you so much for your time and making this happen. How about you let us know how can people reach you, and certainly how can people get your book?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So, again, my name is Mike Gospe, G-O-S-P-E. I invite folks to email me at mikeg@kickstartall.com. And that's one word, kickstartall.com. I also invite people to or folks to visit our website, which is www.kickstartall.com. There's some other writings and resources that you may feel free to peruse our library section. And for the book, you can get the book either on Amazon or by going to the Happy About website, www.happyabout.info. And I am open to any and all feedback on the book or just general questions. So please know you can contact me at any time. Happy to help answer questions.
Oh, super. Thanks. And I also want to thank Raymaker Systems, our sponsor. And Raymaker actually does practice marketing campaign development for outside companies, and they use the big C very often. So I appreciate you you saying that. Yeah, thank you very much for participating, and hope to see you during the next teleseminar.
Great. Thanks very much, Mitchell.